Your old or broken phone can let you down. But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on MyPlan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
All right, we are live. That's right, it's Monday afternoon. It's February the 3rd. This is Winning Cures Everything. It's a college football podcast. I'm your host, Gary Seegers, of course, at GaryWCE on all the different socials. I am, of course, most active on X. Hopefully you guys watched the Royal Rumble on Saturday night. The boy and I did, and I got to tell you, Jey Uso winning that thing was the last thing that I would have ever expected out of that show. Look, for a long time, I was out on WWE, but having a six-year-old that's shocked by everything that happens, it's kind of changed the game for me. He and I and some friends, we're going to see SmackDown on Friday night. And yeah, I mean, we went to a house show in Huntsville last September. We had an absolute blast. I got to tell you, I'm at the point where I would not mind hopping on a wrestling podcast to talk about all the crazy storylines that are happening in this. I mean, it is good stuff. If you look at it as a TV show instead of like an actual sport, it's way more entertaining than you would think. I am a CM Punk fan now. I didn't know anything about him until like a year ago. Apparently, he's been doing this forever. So it is what it is. Kenneth Collins already jumped in the chat. He said, I'm going to hit as many of these as I can. Wish you luck. And as always, love your act. I appreciate that. It's not an act. It's just me. This is just what I do. Enough about the WWE stuff. I could talk about that for hours. Thanks to JD in New York, who I've really enjoyed his podcast. But either way, so far, so good with the scheduled college football live streams. If you missed it last week, my plan is to go live every Monday and Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern time. No, it's not a perfect time for everybody, but it is when I can be the most consistent. So that's what we're going to do here. Every Monday and Thursday, 6 p.m. Eastern time. As always, you see Kenneth in the chat. I want you guys to be part of the show. So hop in the chat with any thoughts or questions. I'll be reading and answering those throughout the show. Super chats, of course, get first dibs. You guys know how that works. But let's go on and move into topic number one here. And we got to ask the question. Is Nebraska's spring game done for good? That's the question. Like, the spring game might be on the chopping block with Cornhuskers. And it's not about injuries or scheduling or fan interest, because that's obviously at a super high level. This has to do with player poaching in the NIL era. So is this going to be the future of college football? Like, if Nebraska cancels, somebody's going to be next, right? Nebraska's spring game is one of the biggest in the country. In 2024, the attendance was 60,452 fans. That was the fourth highest nationally, behind Ohio State, Alabama, and Penn State. It aired on the Big Ten Network, which is great national exposure, but that's also a risk, right? And the problem being that, you know, that exposure works both ways. Head coach Matt Rhule said that that he's not worried about injuries. He's worried about other teams stealing his players. And the quote here was, the word tampering doesn't exist anymore. It's just an absolute free, open, common market. I don't necessarily want to open up to the outside world and have people watch our guys and say, he looks like a pretty good player. Let's go get him. I get what he's saying. And after what happened last year, I mean, it makes all the sense in the world. They had six players enter the transfer portal within a week of last year's spring game at Nebraska. And that's just the ones who actually officially entered, right? Many more could have been recruited behind the scenes. And it's not just a problem at Nebraska. This is happening across the country, right? The spring transfer window runs through April 25th. That means schools have a final chance to recruit players off other teams before the summer, which sucks, right? Because you don't know what your roster is going to look like in the fall. if you're losing guys in the spring portal. The reason it's such a big deal is it's something that we just witnessed last month. This thing's absolutely going to have billable hours winning, right? Wisconsin safety Xavier Lucas, he transferred to Miami without even entering the portal, which is a clear sign of pretty aggressive back channel recruiting, right? And this was after Lucas signed an NIL agreement with Wisconsin a week before he asked to be put in the portal. So there's going to be lawsuits. Wisconsin is suing Miami. The player was going to sue Wisconsin. I mean, it's just the whole thing. And the NCAA came out and said, yeah, the transfer portal doesn't really matter. Like, it's just this thing that's in the calendar, but you don't have to do that. We can't stop you from going to play somewhere else. So it becomes a whole thing. NIL collectives and agents play, I guess, potentially a bigger role in recruiting than coaches do at this point. And the big change that may be coming, many FBS head coaches have backed a shorter single transfer window in January to kind of help limit the midseason chaos. And it makes me think that, you know, Matt Rhule and some of those other coaches that are pushing for this calendar change could all be doing this almost as a protest to get some schedule relief. Like basically saying, yeah, we'll do spring games again when you get rid of the spring transfer window. And if enough of them cancel those games, because they are pretty good ratings for Fox, ESPN, Big Ten Network, SEC Network, etc. If you get enough of those networks on board, maybe they can push to have something like this. But even then, it still might go to court and it still might not matter, right? Like, you can put whatever window on the books you want. The NCAA has said that the portal doesn't matter. You can go whenever you want to. So, but the bottom line is this. Spring games are becoming a scouting opportunity for rival programs. And Rhule's stance is, why would he showcase new talent if they're just going to get poached, right? So what's next for Nebraska? Like, Rhule hasn't officially canceled the spring game yet, but he kind of confirmed that it won't happen. Right? He said, I don't know that yet, but I highly doubt it. I mean, there are some alternative plans in the works, right? The athletic director, Troy Dannon, he said that they could have a fan event on April 26th that might feature football and some other fall sports. He said spring scrimmages are still going to happen. They're just going to be behind closed doors. And maybe, potentially, you might get like some private showcases that are limited to recruits and big money boosters like some of the NIL bunch and then select media and all that kind of stuff. That kind of stuff keeps the team engaged without exposing the players to other teams. Like, Nebraska wants to keep the fans involved, but obviously not at the cost of losing key players. So if Nebraska cancels their spring game, it could be the first domino to fall, right? In this era, other programs, especially those with big money, especially those with big money competitors, really, they might follow suit. So, you know, do you go to closed-door scrimmages? Do you do the private fan events instead of public games? College football is a business. Coaches are all kind of adjusting on the fly. Like, we all kind of laughed at Lane Kiffin having his guys go out and do, like, a slam dunk contest, right? They played, like, some backyard barbecue games last year. He might have been ahead of the curve. Like, Kirby Smart even came out and said, like, we play football here at Georgia. Okay, like, showcase one of you guys and see if Ole Miss doesn't come and offer him, you know, a six-figure deal and see if he leaves. Like, I mean, you know, this is what we're seeing here. We'll see if this is the first of many spring changes that we see this year. But it certainly seems to make a lot of sense. We'll see if it's just a protest thing, if they end up getting the calendar changed. I don't think it's necessarily going to matter, but we'll see what happens. We'll go from there. Let's move on to topic number two. And Ryan Grubb is the new offensive coordinator in Tuscaloosa. And this is not just a good hire. This is a championship-level move, right? It reunites Kalen DeBoer and Grubb. This is a duo that took Washington to the national title game. They had success at Fresno. Like, if you're a Bama fan, like, this hire puts Alabama right back in the title race. Grubb's track record under DeBoer, they had an elite passing attack, right? Washington had the number two passing offense in 2023, that 343-plus yards per game. quarterback development was huge. They turned Michael Penix into a Heisman finalist and an NFL first round pick. Even with all the injuries and whatnot that he had, like he's starting games for the Falcons right now. I mean, it's just bananas. And he's a proven winner. Like obviously he helped lead Washington to the national championship game, but he wasn't just successful at Washington. He was with DeBoer at Fresno. They were at Indiana together. They were at Eastern Michigan together. And they even won national championships together at Sioux Falls. Like, they have been together for a long, long time. Now, Grubb did join DeBoer in Tuscaloosa last year, but he was hired, you know, to the NFL. He was the Seahawks offensive coordinator. That lasted a year. And I'll tell you, the last time that this exact same thing happened was with Steve Sarkisian. He got hired as the offensive coordinator. He coached in the national championship game, replacing, good gracious, he replaced Lane Kiffin, right? He goes to the Falcons for 2 years after that, and then he comes back. He spent 2 years at Bama as the offensive coordinator, won a national championship in 2020, and then took the Texas job. Like, he's done pretty well for himself there, if I do say so. Like, he's done a pretty good job. So after just one season, Grubb is back in college football. He's reuniting with DeBoer in Tuscaloosa. And the reason this is so important is because Alabama's offensive identity is now solidified under DeBoer. You're going to have vertical passing, creative formations, tempo-driven execution. All that stuff is back in Tuscaloosa. And Grubb has got just a stable of quarterbacks to be able to pick from, right? You got Keelan Russell, the highest-rated quarterback recruit in Alabama history, which is just bananas. They compare him to a right-handed Michael Penix with more mobility. Like, we'll see. We'll see about that. Ty Simpson is the presumed starter, former five-star. He's had a lot of time to develop, but obviously he's got a lot of competition now. And then Austin Mack, who transferred in from Washington, he already knows Grubb's system. It's a guy that wasn't highly rated as a recruit, but it's somebody that DeBoer and Grubb both really like. Like, the key takeaway here is Alabama quarterbacks have a better system fit than Jalen Milroe had in 2024. Going forward, you can expect a more explosive passing attack. I mean, the wide receiver room is loaded with playmakers. Yeah, they lost some guys, Kobe Prentice, Kendrick Law, et cetera. But you got Ryan Williams. You got Jeremy Bernard. You got Isaiah Horton. You got several elite recruits that are coming in. Tight ends and running backs are going to be more involved in the passing game. That's something that was missing last season. Bama's going to throw the ball more in 2025. The other thing to pay attention to with this is the offensive line is going to get a boost. Like, Grubb's offense slows down pass rushes with motion and formation shifts. You didn't see a ton of that this past year. Third and long struggles are probably going to improve because you'll probably have better play sequencing. Like, Nick Sheridan is not a bad offensive coordinator, but the chemistry between him and DeBoer is not the same as what Grubb and DeBoer is. The run game should be more diverse here. That'll keep defenses from keying in on power runs. Like, I think the offensive line's job just got easier. And, of course, there was the news today that the Seahawks let go of Scott Huff, who was DeBoer and Grubb's offensive line coach in Washington. Now, he was somebody that they inherited at Washington. He's been with the Huskies since 2017. He could elect to join the Huskies again. Like, they're looking for a new offensive line coach. The Raiders hired Brendan Carroll, who was their offensive line coach, but, man. I got to tell you, Huff did mesh well with Grubb's offense. If he comes on, I would expect the current offensive line coach, Chris Kapilovich, I wouldn't expect him to stick around. I think he's probably going to be gone if Huff decides to join them down in Tuscaloosa. Let's talk about how else this impacts the coaching staff, right? Nick Sheridan, I just brought him up. He was Alabama's offensive coordinator in 2024, but that was more of a, man, we had really planned on Grubb being here, and now he's gone, and we're already into February. What are we going to do? Well, we'll just move up Nick Sheridan. Sheridan is probably going to stay on staff. He's probably going to move back to tight ends coach. The wide receivers coach, Jamarcus Shepherd, he's going to stay in place. He was a co-OC. He was part of Grubb and DeBoer's staff in Washington, too. Did an absolutely outstanding job with the wide receivers at Washington. He'll do well here, too. Brian Ellis, who is the current quarterback's coach, he could move to an off-field role, more than likely. Probably some sort of an analyst position, some sort of... I mean, there's no telling what they could do with him. But this is a big move. Like, Grubb fixes one of Alabama's biggest weaknesses from last season, and that is offensive inconsistency. DeBoer and Grubb together is, I mean, that's a power move, right? You got quarterback talent, you got elite weapons, you got really, I mean, it's a system fit. Alabama should be significantly improved on the offensive side of the ball this season, so long as one of these quarterbacks hit. I think that's the biggest thing that we're looking for here. All right, let's go ahead and catch a quick word from one of our partners. And on the other side, we're going to chat about what's happening at Ohio State.
We're proudly supported by GhostSleeves, the best kinesiology technology on the market. GhostSleeves' patented compression sleeves, socks, and more increase blood flow and lymphatic flow to help your body recover, manage pain, and maintain peak performance. Right now, you can save 15% by going to GhostSleeves.com/WCE or by using the promo code WCE on their site. GhostSleeves, it's go time.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on MyPlan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
All right, we move along to Ohio State. And I think the easiest way to say this is that Chip Kelly cashed in. Like, he's got the biggest coordinator contract in NFL history. Chip Kelly is making $6 million a year as the Las Vegas Raiders offensive coordinator. Yes, the same Chip Kelly who just helped Ohio State win the national championship, he's going back to the NFL, and he is making absolute bank. He's getting paid triple what he made at Ohio State because he was making $2 million a year. The salary he's getting to be an offensive coordinator is almost identical to his UCLA salary in 2023. He was making $6.1 million a year. This is the highest salary for any coordinator in the NFL. And this isn't just a casual move to the NFL. Like, Kelly was obviously in high demand. The Raiders made it obvious they were not going to lose him to another team. But I'll tell you, it seems kind of like a coach in waiting deal. Like, nobody is going to be able to outbid the Raiders on this. Kelly's already got NFL experience. And Pete Carroll is the head coach. He signed a 3-year deal as a head coach. The man is 73 years old. I mean, tell me what you think it sounds like. We're not here to talk about the NFL. We want to hit on what this means for Ohio State. Kelly, obviously not the only assistant that's leaving Columbus. He is the third major Buckeyes assistant to depart after the championship season. We've already talked about Jim Knowles. He's going to Penn State. We already talked about that. Justin Fry. By the way, Jim Knowles, there was something that came out today, I believe. I think Brandon Marcello is the one that, see if I can pull it up. There ain't no telling. There's no telling. But Brandon Marcello said that there were philosophical differences between Knowles and the Ohio State staff. So I get it. I mean, it makes sense, right? At least it should. Justin Fry, the offensive line coach, he is going to the Arizona Cardinals. And there, if you go and read the message boards, there are some Ohio State fans that are totally fine with this. But I think that guy did a knockout job dealing with the big injuries this season. I mean, they lost maybe the best left tackle and the best center in the country and still won a national championship. I mean, that's a pretty big deal. And so, let's see. I'm not going to be able to find Marcello's article. But either way, I know it was philosophical differences with the Knowles situation. So, and then, of course, Chip Kelly going to the Raiders. So this means that Ryan Day has got to replace both of his coordinators in the same offseason, which is no small task, even for a team that just reached the national championship. I don't think they're going to be hurting for coaching talent. But Ohio State losing Kelly's, you know, obviously NFL-caliber offensive mind, that's a pretty big blow. Ryan Day has called plays forever. And the 1 year that he turns over play calling, they win a title. Pretty big deal. So I think Day's probably got his work cut out for him. The question, of course, can they maintain their offensive dominance without the guy who just led them to the national title? 11 Warriors has got a pretty good list of potential options. So we'll go through a few of these. Kevin Wilson is the first name on the list. He was at Tulsa as their head coach. He was Day's offensive coordinator for several years. So they've obviously got a pretty good rapport there. That seems the most likely, I think. But you've also got Brian Hartline on staff. He's the current wide receivers coach. He was OC for a year prior to that. But Ryan Day called plays. It's almost like they didn't trust Hartline to call plays. You've seen the wide receiver room at Ohio State for years. I mean, Hartline is an incredible wide receivers coach. Have you ever been promoted to the point of failure? Like, maybe Hartline is just the best wide receiver coach in the country. Maybe he was never intended to be more than that. But maybe he was. Maybe he just hadn't had the chance. I mean, the guy's still really, really young. But who knows? Maybe they give him another chance and just keep it in-house. We'll see. Jason Candle was another one. He's the current coach at Toledo. He has been looking for an exit route. Like I think it is fairly obvious at this point that he is just not going to get a big-time coaching job jumping from Toledo. So he's going to have to go a different route. He's going to have to go the coordinator route, I think. Alabama did this with Kane Womack and Mo Lingist last year. Kane was at South Alabama as head coach. Mo was at Buffalo. Both of them left head coaching jobs to come be coordinators at Alabama. Ohio State could absolutely do the same thing. Obviously, they did it with Chip Kelly last year. Chip Kelly was the UCLA head coach. He left there to go be the offensive coordinator at Ohio State. So it can turn into big things. But does Jason Candle, like, what? Does that move anybody? Does that help with recruiting? Like, what does that do? The same thing could be said kind of for Joe Moorhead, right? Akron head coach. This is the one that I'm kind of pulling for the most that I want to see happen. Because it might kind of stick in the craw of Penn State fans, right? He was their offensive coordinator when they won the Big Ten. And that was before he became Mississippi State's head coach. Then he was Oregon's offensive coordinator. Then now he's Akron's head coach. Things aren't going all that well at Akron. But you know Moorhead knows what he's doing. So, yeah, I think it'd be great. That'd be a great hire. Jeff Nixon is another name. He's the current offensive coordinator at Syracuse. Ran a really fun, like, high-flying offense with Ohio State's ex-quarterback, Kyle McCord, this past season. He helped his offense basically led Syracuse to only their second 10-win season in at least two decades, if not longer. I mean, I know they had one under Dino, but I don't remember the last one that they had before that. And then the last name on the list is Will Stein, current Oregon offensive coordinator. He used to be at UTSA, so a lot of ties in Texas, all that kind of stuff. Really young guy. Would you leave Oregon right now? I mean, Ohio State is huge. You'd probably have to pay him oodles of money. And even then, I don't know that Oregon would be outbid because they really seem to like what Will Stein is doing. My initial guess is that Kevin Wilson makes a whole lot of sense. There's so much familiarity there. But, I mean, you guys tell me in the comments. Y'all let me know. Like, who is next up here? What move makes sense for these guys like Julian Sayin, right? And Jeremiah Smith. I mean, these are absolute pros that are going to be playing there. The offensive line is going to be good. They got playmakers all over the place. Who makes the most sense for Ohio State? I think it's probably going to be Kevin Wilson because when something happens, you normally retreat back to something that's more familiar, and Ryan Day and Kevin Wilson were there they were there together for a long time. So let's talk about Oklahoma for a bit. Oklahoma's defense is getting a new leader in 2025, and it's Brent Venables. The head coach announced he is going to call defensive plays himself this season. He's going to take full control of the Sooners defense for the first time since he got there in late 2021. He's been there for 2021, 22, and 23. Two not very good seasons, one 10-win season right in the middle of it. You know, his decision comes after a month-long search for a new defense coordinator that ended without a hire, right? Zach Alley was the defense coordinator last year. He came over from Jacksonville State and did really well. But Alley left to go to West Virginia in December to rejoin with Rich Rodriguez. But yeah, Oklahoma just decided not to hire a DC. They did hire two key defensive assistants that should help bolster the staff. Everybody thought they were going to get Jim Knowles from Ohio State, but when that didn't happen, I guess Venables figured that he was the next best option, right? I mean, Venables is, he's won three national championships as a coordinator. He made it pretty clear that he believes Oklahoma's defense is built for success in the SEC. And I mean, the numbers this past year certainly showed that, but his quote was, I have reflected on all facets of our program over the past several weeks. Since I was hired as head coach, we have carefully assembled the defensive personnel and scheme that is suited to compete at the highest level, and we've built a deep and talented roster ready for the moment. I have high expectations for our program and will do everything in my power to achieve our goals for our players. To that end, I will take over defensive play calling responsibilities for the 2025 season. That boy sounds serious, don't he? Venables previously handled defensive play calling duties, handed play calling duties to Ted Roof in 2022 and 23, Zach Alley in 2024. Oklahoma ranked 19th nationally in total defense. They gave up 318.2 yards per game. They finished fifth in the SEC, which top 20 nationally is pretty, like, the offense continually put the defense in terrible situations last year. When the defense was on, they were on. Like, defense was not the problem. So, and this is a crucial year coming up. The two new defensive assistants, by the way, that should help support his transition back into play calling. Nate Drelling, who is going to be the inside linebackers coach, he was the interim head coach at Utah State this year. He had to replace Blake Anderson very quickly, former Arkansas State defensive coordinator. Like, the guy has a lot of experience, and he is very highly thought of by a lot of people. And the other one is Wes Goodwin, and you probably know that name. He was the defensive coordinator at Clemson for the past 3 years. He took over for Venables. He was dismissed after this past year. But, you know, he was the right-hand man for Venables when he was in Clemson. And they did some pretty outstanding things together. But Goodwin was really young, and he's got some good experience now. But he had never been a defense coordinator before. So, at least not at that level, right? So, both Drelling and Goodwin, they bring some pretty extensive experience and some different perspectives, right? It should give Venables some more support as he assumes full control of this defense. So what does it mean as far as 2025 goes? Venables is proven. Like, his leadership could push Oklahoma's defense into the top tier of the SEC. You've got some good young staff members now. I think that's a good thing. Kenneth jumps in on the chat. I think it's normally not good when the coach takes over play calling for one side of the ball. Yeah, it's probably not. But at the same time, who was the better option? Right, I think given all of the options, I would rather have Venables calling plays for this defense as opposed to just handing it off to somebody that you don't necessarily trust. And this is make or break, right? Like, this is absolutely make or break. You got Ben Arbuckle coming in as the offensive coordinator from Washington State, young guy. The coaching staff is evolving right now. Drelling, young. Goodwin, young. I think this is good. Like, they were solid last year, not elite on defense. The offense was an absolute train wreck. So if Arbuckle can change that offense around, and even if the defense stays the same, they should be a lot better than they were. Although that schedule this year is just, I mean, it is rough. And Kenneth, I mean, you're right. This is a high-stakes move, right? He's got to make sure this defense is ready. And when you take on play calling, like, he's letting everybody know it's his priority. The expectations are going to be through the roof. And if they don't perform, I mean, it was probably all she wrote anyway, but this would just be another nail in the coffin. So we'll see what ends up happening. Speaking of defensive coordinators, Georgia Tech is in the market for a new DC. It was reported over the weekend by Chad Bishop of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution that defensive coordinator Tyler Santucci is leaving Georgia Tech. He's going to join the Baltimore Ravens as their linebackers coach. And let's not get it twisted. I mean, this is a massive loss for Brent Key's staff. And Santucci, he's part of the Mike Elko tree, right? He came from Duke. The guy immediately transformed a struggling Georgia Tech defense into one of the most improved units in the ACC. They improved their tackling massively. Their PFF grade just shot through the roof. They were so much better. So much better this past year. It's a huge loss. And as far as where Key might look for Santucci's replacement, Georgia Tech's, their defense, to put it kindly, was a mess before that. And in one season, he flipped things completely around. Georgia Tech finished fourth in the ACC in total defense last year. They were sixth in the ACC in rushing defense. What I talked about with tackling, just discipline, fundamentals, like there was a huge improvement there. And his impact was immediate. Like he was aggressive, incredibly fundamentally sound, which you have to do at places like Duke and Georgia Tech. And it paid off, which is why the Ravens came calling. As far as the next move, like they got to get a new defensive coordinator. They got to do it pretty quickly, I think. Do you promote from within? Right, Georgia Tech has some rising defensive assistants who know the system, but I don't know that there's an elite option on the staff. Jess Simpson, the current defensive line coach, he makes a lot of sense. He's got a ton of experience, a lot of ties in Georgia high school, so that should help with recruiting and whatnot. If he goes outside the program, I don't even know what the next option might be. If you're looking in the G5 ranks, then I think that's probably what they would do. I don't think you could get another guy from a P5 program or even somebody that's like a position coach in the NFL. I don't think that that's there. Key has got a good track record of hiring coordinators, right? He nailed it with Buster Faulkner. Like Faulkner was a quality control guy for offense for Georgia. And that guy has just been amazing. Absolutely amazing. If they did want to go and get another guy, the defensive coordinator at Ohio, let's see. I'm going to look at it. I know this is great radio, but still. Let's see. Spence Nowinski at Ohio. Now, John Hauser. That's it. Defensive coordinator and associate head coach for the Ohio Bobcats. He would absolutely be pretty good. Ohio's defense should have never been as good as they were. Obviously, going from the MAC to the ACC, that's a little bit different, but it is what it is. As for why the NFL wanted Santucci, he had the ACC's top-ranked scoring defense with Duke in 2023. He was a Broyles Award nominee. He was at Texas A&M from 2020 through 2022. Linebackers coach, co-DC. He was at Wake Forest. He was at Texas State. He was at Notre Dame. The guy is known for developing linebackers. He has disciplined physical defenses. Harbaugh is going to love that guy. It fits the Ravens perfectly. Just hard-nosed NFL-rated defenders. So, yeah, they're gonna kill it. So, I think this is a huge hire for Georgia Tech. So I would expect something big coming up on this one. Let's do one more ad, and then I want to talk about. We're going to talk some more coaches. We're going to talk some more. We're going to talk some NCAA stuff. The NCAA decided to settle a lawsuit, so obviously we got a hit on that. All right, that'll be next after the break. Tickets to everything are expensive these days, and I know you're like me. You want to catch a big game or a concert, maybe even tickets to a show? Why not save some money every time you buy tickets? Visit TicketSmarter.com or use the TicketSmarter mobile app and use the promo code WCE10, that's WCE10, to save $10 on any order of $100 or more, or use WCE20, that's WCE20, to save $20 on an order of $300 or more. It's not a one-time sign-up bonus or anything, seriously. Every time you buy tickets, you can save money on already great deals. So do yourself a favor. Think smarter with Ticket Smarter. The NCAA reached a settlement in their NIL recruiting inducement lawsuit with Tennessee and Virginia, right? And this is something that could probably reshape the landscape of college athletics. It probably already has, to be completely honest. But it's basically over the use of NIL compensation as a recruiting inducement. Tennessee and Virginia both said, you can't tell us that we can't pay high school players to come play for our university. You can't do that. And they sued them, and the NCAA realized that they were going to get blasted in court. The resolution came after a year-long legal battle, and it's just it highlights the shifting dynamics, right, between athletes' rights and traditional NCAA regulations. The settlement comes in response to a 2024 antitrust lawsuit that challenged the NCAA's prohibition on using NIL compensation as a recruiting tool. Now, while the specific terms of the settlement have not been disclosed, it does mark a significant step in the evolving relationship between college athletics and NIL regulations. The agreement does not interfere with the House settlement, the ongoing $2.8 billion settlement, and that involves like separate antitrust claims. This larger settlement could allow schools to share revenue directly with athletes, right? That's the House case. And it could set a precedent for, you know, a more financially inclusive model in college sports. Last February, see if I get all my notes right, a federal judge granted Tennessee and Virginia a preliminary injunction, and that prevented the NCAA from enforcing rules that restricted NIL use in recruiting. In response, the NCAA paused all investigations that were involving third-party NIL activities. They were going after everybody, right? And the reason that this became a huge thing is because the NCAA was digging into Nico Iamaliava in Tennessee, because they were diving into the fact that that five-star quarterback got like an $8 million deal to come play for Tennessee. Like, he signed all kind of deals. He was based in California, so it was, I think, technically legal out there. The agreement facilitated, it was facilitated by a collective that supported Tennessee athletics. And it questioned whether such deals breached NCAA rules and all that kind of stuff. As it gained traction, like attorney generals from Florida, from New York, from DC, they all joined the suit. They underscored the national implications of NIL regulations and recruiting. And, you know, you had quotes from the Tennessee AG that came out and said, we've been fighting hard to protect Tennessee student athletes. Last year, we blocked the NCAA's unlawful enforcement against Tennessee students and schools. And now this settlement, in principle, lays the groundwork for a permanent solution. The NCAA, they came out, they said the settlement is basically a means to address the concerns raised by the states while ensuring that the continuation of other major settlements like House and, hold on, there's another one, House, Carter, and Hubbard, those continue on. So this is good, I think. Like, as far as revenue sharing and athlete compensation and all that, like the House settlement, it's going to pave the way for direct revenue sharing with athletes starting in the 2025-2026 school year. The relevance of the NCAA's previous recruiting rules is kind of gone. Like, there is nothing that is the same as it used to be as far as this is concerned. So, you know, the House settlement is still pending final approval. You got a federal judge in Northern California that's got a pretty crucial hearing that's scheduled for April 7th. But this case being done is, I think it's good. I think it's good. The NCAA are going away. Like, there's nothing for them to do anymore. So we'll see how long that lasts. This all kind of ties back into the whole Super League thing that I've been worried about. And we'll see what happens with it. We'll see. One more topic. Well, let's do two more topics, but one more of these. We'll have fun with this last one. Utah Athletics reported a $17 million deficit after their Pac-12 payback and the Big 12 move, right? And I'm sure you're questioning, what do you mean payback? What are you talking about? Well, with conference realignment and the unexpected Comcast payback in the Pac-12,
Utah Athletics is facing a $17 million deficit for the 2024 fiscal year. Now, this is just the first of many. But as the Utes transition into the Big 12, they're navigating some financial turbulence, right? So you've got several external factors that contributed to the first deficit since the COVID era. The biggest hit came from having to pay back $10.4 million in revenue because of the overpayment scandal within the Pac-12 and Comcast. So those that wish that the Pac-12 had remained and all that kind of stuff, I don't know that they will ever be able to forgive the Pac-12 for how ridiculous they were. They didn't pay attention to stuff. No details. None of that. The Pac-12 imploded because of their own incompetence, right? The overpayments, which were known internally within the Pac-12 since 2017, they were discovered in an audit in 2022, and it forced schools like Utah to pay back millions of dollars. So they saw their conference distribution drop from $2.5 million in 2023 to owing $7.9 million in 2024. That is a lot. Upon exiting the Pac-12, Utah and some of these other schools that left, they didn't receive payments from an existing settlement with Oregon State and Washington State. And this was part of a $50 million deal where Utah saw at least $5 million withheld, with an additional $1.5 million that was required in supplemental contributions. And then on top of that, you got legal fees for leaving the conference, you got increased travel costs, you got rising university attendance costs. That all added to the burden here. You got the rising cost of attendance, which was a factor that affected, you know, scholarship and financial aid. That put additional strain on the athletics budget. But Utah isn't the only ones facing this, right? Several other major programs have reported losses. Ohio State is the biggest one. We hadn't talked about them, but I wanted to hit on the Pac-12 stuff first. Ohio State, $37.7 million deficit. Whew. Like, we can dive into that all day. UCLA, $51.8 million deficit. Alabama, $28 million deficit, and that had to do with the Nick Saban retirement situation. Had to pay out all the old coaches, had to bring in new coaches, and just a whole mess. Michigan State had a $16.7 million deficit. Missouri, $15.2 million deficit. Here's the good news. Utah covered the deficit using athletic reserves from previous years, and that's a financial cushion that helped them avoid deeper immediate trouble. The athletic department did see growth in some pretty key revenue areas. Ticket sales were up. Donations increased when they moved to the Big 12. So that's good. The university generated $14.8 million in ticket sales, and that marked an increase of nearly $2 million from the prior year. Now, part of that probably had to do with bumping them prices up a little bit because everybody thought Cam Rising's back and we're about to run this league. And they win four games, five games? Not good. Fan engagement was good, despite the fact that they sucked this year. I'm trying to be nice, Utah. I could probably find a better way to say that they sucked as opposed to saying they sucked, but you get the point. So, the $8 million Comcast payback was just ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. So, men's basketball was profitable. Like, that's good. Football and men's basketball both were profitable. Nearly every other sport saw larger deficits than in the previous fiscal year, so it is what it is. Curious to see what this is going to look like going forward. The move to the Big 12 was much needed, right? Because the Pac-12 just destroyed themselves. I mean, it was just an absolute mess. But, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. All right, before we wrap things up today, we haven't talked about this yet. They've been out for a while. Let's go through some of the opening win totals. And I won't mention the book because, hey, you want to get mentioned? You email me. Gary@winningcureseverything.com. We'll talk numbers. But anyway, look, we got some opening regular season win totals here. We're going to deep dive these a little more soon. But for now, I'll just give you some off-the-cuff predictions and picks on these just to talk through. Let's go on and pull this thing up here. And let's see what we're looking at. Start off with these, because there's not a lot of schools here, but we might as well go on and roll through them. Alabama, their regular season win total is 8.5 right now, minus 200
to the over. It's plus 154 to go under 8.5. The over is a favorite for a reason here. I would go over on this. I do think the offense is going to be a lot better this year, and the defense returns a ton of guys. Defense is still going to be pretty good. Clemson, regular season win total to go over 9.5 is plus 126. Let's pull up FB schedules. Let's see what we got. Well, this is taking a long time, isn't it? FB schedules usually a lot faster than this. All right, ACC. Let's go to Clemson. Let's take a look at what they got. 2025. And they start with LSU. You got at Georgia Tech. You got Syracuse. I think Syracuse is probably going to drop off. At North Carolina with old Bill Belichick. You got SMU at home. Duke at home. Florida State at home. At Louisville. At South Carolina. Maybe over. Cade Klubnik's last season. Defense might be better. Well, probably going to be better under Tom Allen. Yeah. I think I might go over there. Interesting. So plus 126 to go over. Colorado, their regular season wins. 6.5. And to go over is the favorite at minus 128. So let's grab that. Let's see what Colorado's got going on. Remember, they lose Shedeur Sanders. They lose Shiloh, which might actually be a positive. Maybe. We'll see. We'll see. But they lose Travis Hunter, and that's a big deal. All right, Colorado football schedule. You got Georgia Tech, Delaware, Wyoming, Arizona, Arizona State. Well, that's a lot of home games to start with, isn't it? Oh, wait, no. We don't have the Big 12 schedules yet. At Houston, at Kansas State, at TCU, at Utah, at West Virginia. Man, that's a lot of travel. They're going to have to change up what they do. I think if I had to pick today, I'd probably go with the under 6.5. Because how do you lose two top 10 draft picks at Colorado and still be good? And remember, they've got Juju Lewis coming in and Caden Salter at quarterback. That's two quarterbacks that aren't exactly known for passing the football. And you had an offense last year that threw the ball 70% of the time, I think it was. And that's a lot. Florida, regular season wins. Over 6.5 is minus 130. Or sorry, minus 138. So Florida favored to go over 6.5. They've got the same schedule that they had last year. It's just flipped. Like now they got some different games at home and whatnot. Let's take a look at Florida's schedule. They got some interesting stuff. Long Island is where they start. USF. Then at LSU in week 3. At Miami in week 4. Host Texas after a bye week. At Texas A&M. Georgia. At Kentucky. At Ole Miss. Tennessee and Florida State. I could see 7 wins. I mean, they got DJ Lagway. So, yeah, that makes all the sense in the world. Georgia, 9.5 to go over is minus 186. I'm not even going to look at the schedule. It makes sense. It makes sense. Indiana, over 8.5. Minus 102 to go under is minus 125. 8.5 is an absurd number. I know that they got Mendoza from Cal at quarterback, but there's some other changes going on there. I'd probably go with the under 8.5. I like Cignetti. But that schedule is a lot more difficult this year. Iowa, 6.5. To go over is minus 196. Yeah, there's a lot of juice there for a reason. Iowa State, over 7.5. Plus 108. They're going to be losing some guys, but they bring back quite a bit too. That one I'm going to... I guess I would probably go over. I think Rocco is back. I think... Man, I got to do some research on them. Kansas, over 7.5 is minus 148. Yeah, I like that one. I like that. LSU, over 8.5. I like that one as well, minus 125. Louisville, over 8.5 is minus 174. Under is plus 136. Boy, let's look at that schedule. Let's see what Louisville's got going on. They went 8-4 this year. They lost to Stanford this year. They lost to Notre Dame. But they did get the Kentucky win at the end of the season. All right, they got James Madison. They got Bowling Green at Pitt, at Miami, at Virginia Tech. They host Clemson. They play at SMU. I don't even know what they got on the roster, and I still trust Jeff Brohm. Yeah, I'd probably go over. Minus 174. It's a lot of juice. I'd probably wait and see what goes on there. Miami over 8.5 is minus 150. Remember, we don't know exactly about Carson Beck. We gotta wait and see on Carson Beck. Because he might not be healthy enough to start the season. Like that, there's no telling. They are gonna have dudes, and their schedule does ease up. Not ease up. It was already easy this year. Their schedule is not as ridiculous as you would think. Michigan, over 8.5 is minus 166. It's a lot of faith in Underwood at quarterback or Mikey Keene, one or the other. Is Wink Martindale still going to be the defensive coordinator? I mean, he's got some options, I think. We'll see what happens. But the way that they played in the Outback Bowl or whatever it's called, the ReliaQuest Bowl, yeah, I mean, the over wouldn't make sense. But was that just a one-time bowl game? You know, that's the question. North Carolina, over 7.5 for Bill Belichick's first season is minus 128. Probably go under, just a guess. Notre Dame, regular season, over 10.5 is plus 162. I would certainly go under, but that's juiced at 210, so I don't know how much I love that. Ohio State, 10.5, over is minus 111, under is minus 115. I'd probably go under right now, but I want to see the coaching staffs. I want to see the transfer portal. I got to see some stuff. Ohio State's always going to have good players. Oregon regular season wins, 10.5, minus 113 on both sides. That one's interesting. Their schedule, I believe, got a little more difficult as well. Penn State regular season wins, 10.5, over is plus 132, to go under is minus 170, so that has shifted a little bit. Penn State has to play Oregon and Michigan and Ohio State, if I'm not mistaken. We'll see. Tennessee, we only got three more here. Tennessee, 9.5 to go over is plus 114, so the under is the favorite here. I'd probably go over. Maybe I'd go under. When is it going to click for Nico? That's the question. Texas over 9.5 is minus 210. A lot of Arch Manning love. Yeah, I'd probably go over. I mean, their schedule is the same as it was last year. They get Michigan at home. Not Michigan. They get Ohio State on the road. No, I'd probably go under 10.5. So plus 162? No, it's under 9.5. Yeah, I'd still probably go over. Yeah, we'll see. Last one, USC. Over 7.5 wins is minus 120. Under is minus 104. And I got to tell you, even if they go over this, I still think that there is a possibility that Lincoln Riley is gone because USC did not hire that man and pay him over $10 million a year to go 8-4. Just saying. All right, we're going to talk more about win totals. We're going to talk more about conference championship odds, etc., all throughout the offseason. It's going to be a good time. We're almost up to an hour. Absolutely bananas. Let's go on and wrap this thing. If you haven't already, the show is free. I ask for three things every time out, okay? One, like the video. Hit that thumbs up button for me. That would certainly help me out. Two, subscribe to the channel if you hadn't done that, or the podcast. Like, the more those numbers grow, the more it puts us in front of more people. That helps. And then number three, tell your friends about the show. Whether that is just telling your buddies or you share it on social media. All that stuff matters, and I got to tell you, I really appreciate all of you that are already doing it. If you want to support the show, you can become a member at bettingcfb.com. It's $5 a month, $50 for the year, or you can just toss in donations over there if you don't want to be a member, and you would rather just toss me some money to help keep the gear updated, you know, like microphones and cameras and all that kind of stuff, right? I appreciate you guys that are already doing that. Like, I'm having a blast over there with the college basketball numbers right now. We're going to be doing more bonus podcasts over there as well. So, you know, there is a link in the description. Go and check it out for yourself. Also, link in the description for the BetUS College Football Show. Don't forget to subscribe over there. We're going to have more stuff coming over there very, very soon. You guys are awesome. Thank you for taking time out with me today and multiple times a week. You know, I have fun doing these shows. I'll tell you that. I'm going to see you all again right here on Thursday night. We're going to start doing conference recaps soon. So if you want me to toss something on the show, hit me up on X at GaryWCE, or you can email me Gary@winningcureseverything.com. Till then, take care of yourself. Take care of each other. God bless college football, and hopefully all of your tickets cash this week. Thanks for listening to Winning Cures Everything. Make sure and follow me on Twitter at GaryWCE. If you want to toss in a question, you can email me Gary@winningcureseverything.com. Make sure and hit that subscribe button, and we'll see you next time.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Save on your next oil change at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Choose Castrol Edge Full Synthetic Motor Oil to provide maximum performance and protection for your engine. Get a $15 gift card after rebate when you buy 5 quarts of Castrol Edge for $34.95. Plus, 2 times O Rewards points. Offer valid in-store and online at O'ReillyAuto.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts.